You're listening to Rosemary Goes to the Mall, the saga of one woman's lonely journey around the Mall of America. I run into a bit of a snag, a snafu, if you will, at Guess, when I, which is the first store I go into to do my returns, and I try to return the gold lamé bathing suit. And the saleswoman says, "I'm sorry, but all bathing suit sales are final." And I get a sick feeling because I spent almost $100 on that bathing suit. It is two sizes too small for me, and I certainly want absolutely nothing to do with a gold lamé bathing suit. And so I get a little bit panicked. Sometimes panic makes me retreat, but at this particular moment, panic makes me get very convincing. And so I start to work on her as hard as I can. I say, "Well, I bought it as a gift and it's not the right size." And she says, "Well, do you want to exchange it for the right size?" And I said, "Well, you didn't have any of the right size. You only had smalls in the tops, and I got a small thinking that maybe she would fit into it, but she didn't. And you don't have any medium tops." And I can see her starting to relent. She has that look about her, which is like, you know, she's trained to be a bitch about this, but she knows that I'm kind of stuck. And I say, "It didn't say that anywhere, and no one told me that bathing suit sales are final." In fact, I look at the plaque on the counter, which explains their return policy, and there is absolutely no mention of a bathing suit policy that's different from their regular policy, which is 30 days. She points it out at the bottom of the receipt, and I say, "Well, it says it at the bottom of the receipt, which I get after the sale takes place, and I didn't know, and it was a gift." I reiterate that because it seems really important. It wasn't just like I was flaky and I changed my mind. That person didn't like it or didn't fit into it. And she looks at the receipt, and she said, "Well, you were just in here yesterday." I'm like, "Yes, yes, I was just in here yesterday. That's exactly right. And so we couldn't possibly have contaminated this bathing suit with any germs or whatever it is you're worried about with bathing suits. In fact, it wasn't even tried on." She says, "Well, would you like to exchange it for something else?" And I said, "Well, it was a gift, and we already agreed upon something else that I would give her." I can tell she is softening and relenting, and she says, "All right, I will do it this time for you." And she goes ahead and she proceeds to make the arrangements to refund me my money, upon which I start thanking her profusely and treating her like she's the Queen of England. I mean, I love this woman all of a sudden. So she's saved my hide, really, because I certainly don't want the gold lamé bathing suit, but I also don't want $100 worth of merchandise from the Guess store. Not interested at all. The rest of my returns go just fine. I decide that I'm getting here a little later than usual, and I decide I really need some lunch. And I shouldn't, but I decide that I'm going to go to Tiger Sushi. I've been there a few times since I started this project, and it's not exactly a cheap lunch. But I think about it every time I come in, you know, "Oh, Tiger Sushi, maybe I should have that today." And I lose the battle with my conscience to not spend the money on that. And I march on over, and I figure I'll eat real quick and get it over with. At lunch, I realized something that I hadn't noticed before on any of my earlier visits, which is that inside the chopstick holder, the little paper cover, there is a fortune, which I really wish I had known that, because I would have, you know, read them and saved them each time. But I pull it out. It's a little bit like, you know, a fortune cookie here, but you get it at the beginning of your meal. And my fortune says you will soon undergo a dramatic and wildly successful career change, which will involve circus people, fly swatters, and glitter glue. I have to say I'm a bit mystified by this. I like the wildly successful part. I'm not so into the career change. And I, you know what really I start to think is whoever writes these things must have been having a really bad day. Because, you know, they skipped the part where they're supposed to do something really inspirational that makes you feel better about yourself. Because really, when you start to involve circus people, I know that you're mocking me. Okay, I know that. On the other hand, it kind of sounds like it might be my next project. So I'm going to save this and see if this turns out in any way. In any case, I make my way upstairs and I'm starting on the south wing on the third floor. And of course, the third floor is the floor of crappy cheap stores that can't afford to be on the lower floors of the Mall of America. It also seems to be a food court. So while there are some stores to buy things, there's a lot of places where I'm not going to be able to get a shopping bag. So it's not going to be as many stores as it looks to actually go to and purchase things from. I start at Atlantic Books, which is right outside of Macy's. This is a real crappy bookstore with lots of bargain sections with like crap you'd never ever want. I walk through the bargain section because I figure I'll find something hateful and, you know, well, not hateful, but, you know, I'm going to try to continue on with this, you know, decay of American society or decay of American culture theme. But I figure there's got to be something really, really dumb in the bargain book section that I can get for cheap. I laugh a bit because I walk past a bunch of bargain rows and there's one row which has bargain religious fiction on one shelf, then the next shelf is bargain fiction, and then the third shelf is bargain horror, which I think is just genius to put the religious fiction and the horror on the same row. I wonder if they get the same clientele or whether anyone has ever been deeply offended by the association. In any case, neither of them interest me that much. It just gives me a little chuckle as I walk through. I do find myself in not the religious fiction section, but in the sort of religion / spirituality section, because I figure there's got to be something in here that I will find repulsive in terms of its kitschy take on, you know, whatever. And I am not disappointed at all. In fact, there are so many to choose from that I'm having a little bit of trouble making up my mind. What I settle on, however, is a Book of Hearts. And this book, which is $2.98, and then it's 50% off, so it's only $1.50. This book is a collection of words about love featuring the illustrations of Kathy Felsted. Yuck. It has all of these quotes about love by famous historical figures and really bad quasi-Matisse cutout type illustrations, you know, like "My True Love Hath My Heart and I Have His" by Sir Philip Sidney. What else? So let's get some really good ones. "She Walks in Beauty Like the Night of Cloudless Climes and Starry Skies," Lord Byron. "If I Never Met You, I Would Have Dreamed You Into Being," Sebastian Chantois. "Love Conquers All Things," Virgil. It just revolts me on so many different levels. One of my favorites is "Sex is a Momentary Itch, Love Never Lets You Go" by Kingsley Amis. all in all, I think this book typifies the tendency in our culture to cheapen real emotion and cheapen real sentiment by turning it into, you know, something kitschy, but something really cliched. I hate books like this anyway. This one in particular, especially with the really bad Matisse, you know, not even original looking illustrations. This one offends me deeply. When I check out, I think it's kind of funny because the book only costs $1.49. I'm almost embarrassed to think about even taking this one back. And yet I really, really don't want it. So I probably will force myself to do it, even though it's only for $1.50. I'm walking down the hallway of the third floor here, and I pass by the NASCAR Silicon Motor Speedway, and it has a few t-shirts, but I can't figure out what they sell. It's not like a NASCAR store exactly. So I walk in, and there's a woman behind the counter, and I say, "What is this place?" And she said, "Well, why don't you go back and check it out?" I'm like, okay. She says, "We call it Guy Daycare." So now I'm really intrigued. And I walk back, I follow the sign for spectators, and I go back, and there's this pretty big space in back with multiple screens. There are like three-sided screens, and there's all these little race cars. They're not full size, but they're pretty big, like a person sits down in them. And you buy a ticket and you go in and you sit in one of these cars with your own view computer screen of this computer simulation of NASCAR racing, and you compete against each other. So there's a lot of empty cars because it's a weekday, but there's a husband and wife who are racing each other. And they're really having a good time, and it's kind of exciting to watch. I mean, it's really fast, and I think about going in there and doing it, but, my interest really only goes so far. But what's kind of funny is that the wife beats the guy, and they get out, and the guy who's controlling the whole thing says, "Well, she beat you. She came in 12th, and you came in 17th. And he's grumble, grumble, grumble. And then so because he got beat, they get out, and he insists that they do it again. So they buy more tickets, and they get back in and start up another race. So anyway, I go out and I figure, wow, I've got to get a bag from here. So I buy one of their t-shirts. What's disappointing is that they give it to me in one of those regular thank you bags. So I don't have a bag which says NASCAR Silicon Motor Speedway. I would really like it if I had one, but I guess they don't exist. So that's that. It's really slim pickings up here for what to get. I stop in next at Point of View Optical. I'm thinking, oh, well, buy Keith a pair of sunglasses that can be returned. But I check the return policy with the guy. It's a real kind of small operation. And he says that you can return for exchange, but not for refund. So that's out. I'm not going to buy an expensive pair of sunglasses that can't be returned. So I settle on just getting a little container of eyeglass cleaner, the little sprays, and it's a total ripoff. It costs $4 for this tiny little bottle of eyeglass spray, but so be it. And then, of course, he gives it to me in a bag, which doesn't have their logo on it. It's just a plain bag, so I feel a little bit ripped off. But whatever. I mean, you can always use more eyeglass cleaner, so I'll just, you know, I'll definitely take that home. It's not like it will go to waste. Next is Sadie's, which is actually a children's photography place. And you bring in your little squirts and they take pictures of them on big piles of teddy bears or whatever. They call themselves a very creative place to get your kids picture taken. If I was really dedicated to this project, I'm sure I would bring Evan and Garrett in and actually get their photo taken, except that I think that that would be such a royal waste of money, because I hate stuff like that. I hate those really posy kinds of things. We have gotten Evan's and Garrett's portrait taken when they were babies, but it was a friend of mine who did it, and yeah, she did it on a backdrop, but it was really kind of classy looking. I really think this kind of thing is dumb. I figure I can find something repulsive in here to buy, but in fact, everything is fairly tasteful. Some of their frames are a little bit over the top. There's a bunch of stuffed animals, but I'm not so interested in buying a stuffed animal, and I certainly don't find stuffed animals repulsive. So I actually get kind of practical here, and I need a couple of frames for 8x10 photos because we have some photos that I've taken way too long to get framed of the kids. Actually, the family portraits that we got taken years ago by this friend of mine, and they still haven't been framed. I've got frames for the individual pictures of the kids, so that's done. But the family photos I haven't gotten done, which I'm a little bit embarrassed about. And it would be really good to get some pictures up in our house instead of keeping them all in storage, you know, because I'm too disorganized and lazy to, well, I'm not lazy, I'm just busy, you know, but anyway, it's been embarrassingly long time before I've gotten these framed. So I buy a couple frames. They're a little expensive, but they're nice. And I think that the family pictures will look very nice in them. So yeah, it's just like the third floor on the West Wing in that the stores up here are utter crap. The next store down the line that actually sells things, not just food, is called A Simpler Time, and it's filled with things that are like replicas of antiques and just hokey crap for lots of money. I'm not really in the mood to spend a lot of money here, though, you know, just to make a point that it's hokey and crappy. Also, a lot of it is made out of metal, and I think it's going to be really heavy to carry around. They do have all these plaques. They seem to have a bit of an Irish theme, like Irish pub kind of theme. And there's all kinds of plaques here. And so I figure I can get one of these. They're dumb, but not exactly offensive. Except for one, which I immediately gravitate towards since I'm supposed to be being the kind of pissy, you know, human being today, buying things that offend me. So this fits the bill perfectly, which is a plaque which says, "Men, no shirt, no service. Women, no shirt, free drinks." And, well, you know, I'm not a prude, and I certainly think some kind of bathroom humor is fine. You know, I do find these kinds of jokes about women pretty tiresome. So I buy it, and I actually don't ask the sales girl for their return policy because I don't really want to call attention to what I'm buying. It's not even that. It's that I'm trying to buy it with a straight face, like this is just normal, even though this is completely offensive to women. Like, I think it's funnier to do this and not try to excuse it. So I may get stuck with this, which would really stink, but I kind of figure if there's no sign saying no refunds, then I'm probably safe. Yeah, I'm the proud owner of a really sexist, obnoxious sign. I can't wait to get that home. I'm about to walk right past Caribou Coffee when I realize that just like Starbucks on that first day, they actually have a lot of stuff for sale. I've actually, in the few times I've grabbed a cup of coffee at the Caribou downstairs, I've had my eye on these little Caribou Coffee espresso cups. I don't drink espresso. Sometimes I have a decaf latte, which involves espresso. And Keith does have a little espresso maker that we bought off of our friends who were moving back to Europe when we were still in Brooklyn. Keith drinks a lot of espresso, although now he really only drinks decaf because he started having these weird heart palpitations whenever he drank caffeine. And he even sometimes has them when he drinks decaf, but he drinks it anyway because it doesn't happen all the time. He, as I myself have done, has been able to get himself addicted to decaf coffee, which is always very embarrassing to admit. And I was actually addicted to decaf coffee long before he was, because I quit coffee and then I started drinking decaf because I loved coffee and I missed it. And decaf does have some caffeine in it. And I found myself looking forward to those decaf coffees more and more. And then I found myself having headaches when I couldn't have one. Wow, that's kind of scary when you're starting to have headaches for decaf coffee. I backed off from it when that started to happen. However, the whole point is that we do sometimes drink espresso, particularly Keith. We have espresso cups. And frankly, I would never actually buy something with a logo on it like this. I mean, Caribou Coffee is kind of the kinder, gentler chain. It's, you know, it's more local and it hasn't like taken over the universe the way Starbucks has. Nonetheless, I don't necessarily feel like having an advertisement for Caribou Coffee in my kitchen. Which is kind of funny because I'll wear logos on all kinds of things, like Nike logos on your shoes and whatever else. But for some reason, on like espresso mugs, it seems slightly crass and weird. Nonetheless, this is what I buy. I already got the thermos at Starbucks, so I'm trying to branch out a little bit. Right across from Caribou is Hallmark Gold Crown. And they have all of their Father's Day stuff out and in, you know, full swing here. They've got some annoying t-shirts. Well, one of which I pick up and I'm thinking about buying, says, "Dad, the local branch of the money tree." And I think this is kind of a typical example of more of this taking a cliche and taking it to heart in your life over and over and over again. I just feel like we have these cliched ideas about our relationships with other people. And instead of looking at what the relationship really is, we fall back on these cliches, you know, sometimes they turn out to be true, like men are from Mars, women are from Venus. You know, I would totally get behind that one. But this like relationship of father to child, you know, I don't know, maybe my kids aren't old enough yet. And I would think this was totally dead on. I guess the other thing, you know, more than whether it's true or not, because I don't know, maybe all cliches have a grain of truth to them. But I guess the other thing that bugs me about it is our willingness to wear slogans like that on a t-shirt and like advertise this to the world. Like, this is like the funniest thing you've ever heard, when in fact it's just a total cliche. Like, why not find something really original to wear on a t-shirt, you know, or like a really good advertisement for something cool, or, you know, whatever. Nonetheless, I think about the kind of person who would proudly wear this t-shirt. I don't think it would go over well in my house. However, long story short, I find something infinitely better. So I put the t-shirt back. And what I find is this figurine of father and son, celebrating the bond of love between fathers and sons. And it's called Willow Tree. And it is a really dopey looking figurine of a father kneeling down and a son, you know, in his arms, basically. And if there's something that irritates me more than celebrating a cliche on a t-shirt, it's probably memorializing it in a figurine. I'm not a big fan of figurines. I actually thought they were kind of pretty when I was a kid. And we had some because, you know, I think my Aunt Kay, painted them, but I guess I think that they really tend to be just more examples of kitsch in our lives. These kinds of really, God, I know and respect people who like figurines. So, you know, I should probably, you know, not be so critical, but I guess I just say that I personally think they're dumb and don't want to own them. And this one in particular, like this as a Father's Day present, like if you got Keith a figurine for Father's Day, memorializing the bond of love between him and Evan and Garrett, I think he would look at me like I was completely nuts and with strong disappointment, like, you know, all the things in the world you could have gotten me and you get me a figurine. So anyway, I think that this is the perfect item to get from Hallmark. So I keep walking and I pass by another Mall of America store, and I already bought something in a Mall of America store downstairs on the west, or no, it was still on the third floor, but on the west wing. I got a brown Mall of America t-shirt with pink on it, pink writing that says Mall of America, Minnesota. And I love it. It fits really well. And I wore it the other day, and I won't wear it to the mall because I think that's a little too ironic for, you know, the salespeople in the store. They might think that actually I was just like a huge mall advocate or something. I don't know. But they have, in this one, they have brown t-shirts with blue writing. And for a moment, just a brief moment, I'm tempted to go in and buy another one because I think the blue one is cute too. But I hold myself back at the last minute and save myself from throwing another $20 down the drain because I don't really need another Mall of America bag. And certainly I think the brown and pink is sufficient in terms of my t-shirt collection. On the way past the Mall of America store, I pass by Kokomo's, and there's a series of little stores, and one of them is Kokomo's Key Lime Pie Store. And I'm like, oh crap. You know, I mean, I can control myself in front of a lot of food, but key lime pie is like one of my favorite things on the planet. There's something about that tart sweet thing. It's like lemon bars, key lime pie, you know, that stuff. I melt in front of those things and all my resistance goes away. And I think, well, maybe I don't want to get a whole pie, but maybe they have like little key lime pie tartlets or something like that. And I try the door and it just won't open. And there's a sign on it, which says 9 to 5 most days. I think, well, that's kind of interesting and informal for the Mall of America. And I keep going down and there's several more of these and they're all closed. And so I'm not quite sure what to do. And then there's a Kokomo's restaurant. And I ask the host, I say, well, is your key lime pie store closed today? And he says, I'm really sorry, ma'am, but that's just a storefront. It's like decoration for the restaurant. And I said, oh, gosh, I'm kind of embarrassed. I said, well, do you sell key lime pies? And he said, well, we sell key lime pie. And I said, well, do you sell whole pies or, you know, like, do you have a store in there? But no, they don't. You have to actually go down and sit in the restaurant and order key lime pie. And that may be just a little bit too much effort. I may be able to resist the key lime factor, given that you actually have to make all that effort to actually go in and sit down. It would take far too long. And I have to admit, I am really disappointed and I keep thinking about it all the way down the aisle, you know, as I'm, I kind of mourn for that experience. I really wish I could have had it. Now, at the heart of the food court, which I'm now in, is a Bubba Gump Shrimp Company restaurant and market. It's a big restaurant, and it has a little gift store at the end. And I go in, and there's all kinds of Bubba Gump merchandise. I can't really get my hackles up about anything here. It's fine. It's all dumb, but I can't get worked up about anything. They do have a number of Forrest Gump type things, and I wonder if this Bubba Gump Shrimp Company came into existence before Forrest Gump, or whether they created it because of that movie. Like, do they have the Forrest Gump stuff there because Forrest Gump used them, or is it the other way around? It's kind of like the Mighty Ducks, that hockey team that got created. I think they're in Anaheim. They got created. Are they in Anaheim? They're in California somewhere. They got created because of that, that movie, The Mighty Ducks. And so it's a hockey team named after a kid's movie, which is just so irritating. And that is a perfect example of the decay of American culture when we are naming our everything after entertainment products. Like things come into existence, like an entire restaurant chain, because of a fictional character. So like it becomes a tourist attraction because a movie created it. And what's really annoying about that is that the Forrest Gump movie was actually pretty good. And so to me, it cheapens how good the movie was. It also cheapens, I guess I feel like you go to this place to have this authentic experience in some way of, you know, geez, I don't even know where it's from, where it's supposed to be from fictionally, but you go to have a fictional authentic experience. In the spirit of that, I pick out a t-shirt which has a Forrest Gump quote on it, which says, "Mama always said, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get." And, you know, this irks me on a number of levels because, again, you know, it's kind of a great line, but it's a fictional line. And this, to me, kind of epitomizes this whole weird double think that's going on here. Like, what's real? What's fiction? Fiction becomes real. We're living in a very strange time, I think. Now I'm at the end of the line and it's all food stores around here. So I head off to, Bloomingdale's, and Bloomingdale's is kind of an expensive place. They have very nice things, but I have to say I'm a little overwhelmed by the prices. I check out some Egyptian cotton sheets. I'm up in the bedding section 'cause we're up on the third floor, and the Egyptian cotton sheets for queen size costs $400. I mean, I think having Egyptian cotton sheets is probably a heavenly experience, but it's not a heavenly experience that I'm going to fantasize about today, because that would be the most expensive purchase that I had made here in the mall so far. And I have to say, I'm not quite ready for this one. It pushes the envelope a little bit too much, even for me. It's just sheets after all. I mean, it's not even like mechanical. It's not like a $300 iPod. It's a set of sheets. I figured that maybe I'll buy some ridiculously expensive towels, which are really only $40 a piece for bath towels. And so it's not quite the Egyptian cotton sheets, but at least it's sort of an extravagance that I would not normally allow myself, throwing that much money away on something so pedestrian. I mean, having a nice bath towel, sure, that would be fantastic. And we desperately need some new ones ourselves. But $40 for a bath towel, come on. I think I'll hit a sale at Bed Bath & Beyond instead. Then what catches my eye are these incredibly hideous, fancy bath towels that, I don't know, I think they're meant to look like you belong to the royal family, but it's a real, I imagine the royal family has very understated, really expensive towels. Maybe they have the Egyptian cotton $400 sheets. I mean, I would guess, you know, if you're the Queen of England, you probably spend a lot of money on your sheets. You probably don't even know how much they cost, nor do you care, because you are so wealthy. They okay, there's several different colors, but the ones that I am fixating on are purple, so a royal color, with a gold and purple striped border that's very, very wide. And then there's some elaborate sort of embroidery, and it looks very much very expensive. And then they've got these ugly little gold tassels coming off of the embroidery along the edge. And I mean, it kind of looks like a clown would use these, but they are also meant to hit this kind of note for people, I think, that makes them feel like this is luxury to have these really ugly tassels coming off of their bath towels. It's so extraneous and it is so ridiculous that I have to have them. So I get a set of two towels, two hand towels, and two face cloths each. And the hand towels and the face cloths don't have the ridiculous tassels on them. They just have the ugly borders, but they are a set. And so I decide that, you know, someone who is really purchasing these would get a full set, so that their bathroom would be properly decorated with this stuff. This is a really hideous purchase, but I think I'm hitting a good note in terms of that kind of ridiculous display of your wealth in these really, like, not a classy kind of display. It's really, it's pretty gauche. Now, I leave Bloomingdale's with my purchase, and I am stunned and amazed at the sight which awaits me, which is, right next to Bloomingdale's, is the Chapel of Love. I have heard rumors that there was a wedding chapel in the Mall of America, but I have to say it had slipped my mind until I'm right upon it. And not only is there a wedding chapel, but it's a bridal boutique. And so they have wedding dresses. They have all kinds of really cute bridesmaids dresses and children's, you know, fancy kinds of clothes. Take a long time looking over some of the smaller items. And what I really want to get are these baseball caps, one of which is white and has a veil on the back and it says bride on the front, and the other one is black and it says groom on the front. And this reminds me of when Keith and I went on our honeymoon almost 10 years ago now to Puerto Rico. And Puerto Rico is actually, everybody has to fly through, I think everybody, at least at that point, had to fly through there to go to the rest of the Caribbean islands. So there were, it was so funny. It was a Monday morning and there must have been 8 couples, newlywed couples, on this flight from Boston to San Juan. And every single one of them had bride and groom baseball caps on. I mean, I had never even seen the things before, and every other newly married couple had them on. And this just killed me because, you know, it's fine. You're going to the Caribbean on your honeymoon. Yay. But the fact that you want everyone to know that, I think because it makes you feel special, but then you feel special along with everybody else who has the same exact thing. It's also a cuteness thing. Again, I really hate the cuteness. And so I desperately want to buy these and I'm picking them out. And I decide that I really need to check out the return policy. And so I swing my head around and I see a sign which says no refunds, exchange only. So, I'm not going to spend $25 on each of these hats and waste $50 in the Chapel of Love. So instead I go for this $10 little canister, which is called Table Talkers. And I guess what people do is they, put these on the table, and they are, what it says on the canister is, a thought-provoking collection of conversation starters for more meaningful gatherings of friends and family. and this is the wedding one. And so I don't know if you're supposed to have these at your wedding or whether maybe you sit around with all your newlywed couples or you, the couples that you know who are about to get married, and you pick one of these cards out and you start a conversation. So the first one says, would you rather be surprised with the vacation destination for your honeymoon, or would you like to help plan it? I can imagine a thrilling conversation based on that. The next one is, what is the best part of a wedding ceremony? Explain your answer. Well, I absolutely think the best part of a wedding ceremony is stuffing the cake into your partner's face. Then another one, what is the most romantic thing your spouse or significant other has ever done for you? Or what romantic thing would you like this person to do for you? I think that that's getting you into a whole lot of trouble personally. Would you rather plan every detail of your wedding or have a wedding planner? Why? Yeah, no thanks. This, again, I'm stuck with it, but this to me kind of represents just how boring people must be to have to rely on this kind of crap to have conversations with their friends. So I drag myself away from the Chapel of Love. I could really stay there all day. I do get a little peek into the chapel, which is modest. And I do ask the sales lady before I leave whether they really ever have any weddings in there. And she said that they have between 3 and 7 a week, which I find astounding. And I said, do they make appointments before they come in? And she says they have to make appointments because Minnesota has a 5-day waiting period after you register to marry. I guess you have to wait 5 days. It's kind of like buying a gun. They want to make sure that you still really want it. It doesn't just turn into this spontaneous thing that you're going to immediately regret. I'm glad that the state of Minnesota is looking out for us in that way. In any case, I find it astounding that there are enough people that, let's see, if every week an average of 5 people get married in there, that means 250 people a year get married, 250 couples a year get married at the Mall of America. That is incredible to me. I guess it will never replace Vegas because of the 5-day cooling off period. However, it's totally amazing. That this is something that you can do here in the mall. You can go to the university, you can attend church, and you can get married. And after you get married, you can go on the roller coaster or something. I'm feeling like this has been a pretty productive shopping day, and I just feel like I'll just knock off a few more. So I breeze into Lens Crafters, and after my earlier eyeglass store experience, I'm very wary of their return policy, but it turns out that you can return things up to 30 days. And so I pretend that I'm buying a pair of ridiculously over-the-top Versace red sunglasses with rhinestones on the sides that are $270. And I just knocked those off. It's amazing how easy these big purchases are getting for me. I don't even think about it anymore. So I do that. And I do have a pang while I'm in there because I really, really need a new pair of glasses. And if I were smart, I would be shopping for a pair of prescription glasses for myself. But there's something about this whole project, which because I am here and there dropping so much money on things I don't really need, even though a lot of it gets returned, some of it doesn't. It has kind of impeded my ability to get the things I really, really need, or it's impeded. I'm feeling guilty enough about the money that I am spending that I'm having trouble getting around to the necessities, like, you know, being able to see and not having my glasses fall off my ears spontaneously. I keep going down the line. I'm a little unclear where I am at this point. I knew that I was on the south wing before. I feel like I'm still on the south wing, but I'm not sure exactly. It's a little confusing over here. But the next store next to Lens Crafters is Archivers, the Photo Memory Store. Now, this is the type of place I just despise. There's something about... most of this store is really about scrapbooking. And I have to say that I really hate scrapbooking. I hate it for its cute, crafty self. It's just... you know what I really hate when I'm looking at all this stuff, actually? What I really hate is... that none of it is even homemade. You can buy a scrapbook kit with all the cute crap that you can put on a page with your pictures of, you know, whatever. I find it really irritating. I thought scrapbooking would be something more personal, but in fact, everybody's scrapbooks are going to end up looking exactly the same because they go to scrapbook stores where they buy pre-made fake flowers and pre-made wacky cutouts for the top of the pages. And boy, just what a bunch of junk. And it seems very self-congratulatory in some way. And I can't quite put my finger on why scrapbooking would be self-congratulatory, but there it is. That's what I feel. I have no idea what to get here because it all drives me nuts. So I end up over in the book section and I pick out a book called Decorate Life Scrapbook. And this book is filled with suggestions, visual pictures of suggestions for what a scrapbooked page might look like. I find it amazing that someone who's getting into scrapbooking needs to look at what their scrapbook page should look like. Anyway, I'm going to stop beating a dead horse here, but I buy that book, and needless to say, this to me is another example of the decay of American culture because it's just another example of how dumb we are. I realize when I come out of Archivers that I've actually made my way into the East Wing, which isn't really at all what I intended to do. So I backtrack and I figure, well, I've knocked off a couple stores on this end. I think it was the Chapel of Love distracted me from what I was supposed to be doing. And then I was in a frenzy after that. But I decide it's time to make my way downstairs to the second floor. I've still got a tremendous amount of energy for this, actually. For someone who's been pretty crabby lately when she goes to the mall, I think I'm doing really well today, actually. I go over to the escalator, which is right by the sort of viewing area into the amusement park at the center of the mall. And the ledge there, the fence or whatever, the barrier, is right by the highest point in the log run ride, which is when you climb into a fake log and you get pushed around in streams of water. And it eventually takes you up to the top of this really big hill. And then you go flying down it. And as my friend Patty explained to me, I've never actually done it. Patty says it's even scarier than a roller coaster because at least on a roller coaster, you're attached to something, but in the log run, you're not attached to anything. You're just in a log in water, which is kind of scary when you think about it. Anyway, I realize that I'm right at the top of this where they come out of the weird thing where they're looking at Paul Bunyan and all kinds of, you know, log cabin-y type things. And, they're about to go down that hill. So you see them coming around and they look kind of happy and they're kind of waving at people who are standing there. And then they turn the corner and then you hear these blood curdling screams. It's a really odd experience, to see this. And you realize that they are flying down three stories down to the base of this ride, which is, wow. I mean, that is really creepy actually, if you ask me. As I'm heading towards the escalator, I realize that upstairs there's the AMC theaters and then there's also Hooters. And I think, what a fucking great thing it would be if Hooters had a gift shop and I could get something from there. I would love to get a Hooters bag. So instead of going down, I go up and I head over towards Hooters. And it's a really weird thing. There are all these total babes in tiny little shorts and very tight t-shirts. It's mostly men, but there are a couple women eating in there and drinking. But it is up on another floor, so you won't come into contact with it if you're the average, you know, Joe Schmo. So they keep it really off to the side so no one can get offended. And unfortunately, there is no gift shop. And so I'm really bummed. But I do catch a couple of the girls looking at me through the window, and I feel like I've invaded enemy territory. So I try to act like I'm looking for something I thought would be up here, and then I turn myself around and I head back downstairs. The first store that I hit is The Afternoon, which is one of these gift stores that's kind of funky, and they have all kinds of stuff in there. They've got like, you know, entire cookbook just for cupcakes and things like that. Very attractive everything. I'm drawn first to the self-help books that they have lined up by the front. There's books about how to help you find a job. The one that I pick up is called Happiness: How to Find It and Keep It. And, you know, let's face it, it's easy to mock self-help books. This one, you know, I guess what's easy to mock is that some of it is so obvious that if you thought for 2 seconds, you'd be able to come up with the same answers and make all the money that these guys are trying to make. On the other hand, nothing they write in there is dumb. It's all true. It's just dumbly presented. It's, gosh, you know, there's not one thing in there that I haven't thought of myself. And, you know, if I've thought of it, other people must have thought of it. And I don't know, I guess I have a complicated relationship to self-help books. Part of me wants to mock them because I think they're dumb, because I think it's dumb that people need them. And then part of me thinks, boy, this is kind of a tough world that we live in. It's kind of a tough world. And it's hard to know how to do everything. It's hard to know how to be a good parent. It's hard to know how to be married and be, you know, good to each other. It's hard to know how to find work that makes you happy. And gosh, I start to think that there must just be a ton of people out there who life doesn't make them very happy and they don't know how to fix it. And so maybe these books are good for them. In any case, I put that book down because it's too complicated. And then I end up over in the wine area, and there's these really funny little plates with obnoxious things about, you know, wine tasting and stuff. It's like total snob jokes, but they're kind of cute. But in the theme of getting dumb things, I pick out the wine tasting party kit, and it's everything you need to host a fun and easy wine tasting party at home. On the back, it says, improve your palate, learn more about wine, and enjoy an entertaining evening with the wine tasting party kit. And it includes a 64-page book, 4 tasting notepads, wine glass markers, 6 reusable cloth wine bottle covers, and a cheat sheet of tasting terms. The reason I think this is dumb is, other than the cheat sheet of tasting terms, I can't think of one thing on here that you couldn't supply yourself. But instead you're going to pay $24.95 because we really need our experiences packaged in this country. That's what I think about this. We need our experiences and we need our entertainment packaged. And it just gets my goat, this thing. So I buy it. I pick it out and I buy it. Now, after The Afternoon gift store, I decide I'm through. I mean, that is plenty of shopping for the day, and I'm ready to go home. And I walk down that part of the south wing just to, I decide to count the stores on that level to see if I think I can get through it all in my next trip or whether I'm going to need, you know, a couple more trips. And as I'm counting the stores, I come across the Thomas Kincaid Gallery. Now, I have heard that there was a Thomas Kincaid Gallery, and I've seen it on the map, but I didn't know that I was going to stumble on it here. I just always assumed it was way on the other side of the mall. And wow, I have been waiting for this. Thomas Kincaid is the epitome of horrible, ugly-ass art and kitsch. And so today has been a lot about kitsch. And I figured this is a great way to end the day. They have a ton of paintings in here, and they also have these little figurines, and they have these little painted, little, you know, ceramic boxes, and they've got a little bit of everything. They've got calendars. They've got everything. I realized that I could go in a million different directions here, but I figure that I'm just going to get a book and it'll be inexpensive just in case you can't return things. And so I pick out a book and I bring it up to the desk, and the woman there says, "Do you have any questions?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Oh, okay. Oh, but you have a book. Okay." And she starts to write it up, and I start to ask her questions because I'm really, really curious. I ask her if he ever comes to this gallery. And she says, "It's funny that you ask me that, because he's actually making a personal appearance at this gallery in August, and it's the only Midwest stop he's making." She also said that this is one of only 5 galleries in the country that he owns himself, that a lot of places sell his work, but this is one of the galleries he owns himself. Then she tells me that all of the work in the store is reproductions. And this really shocks me, because these are oil paintings. I mean, you can go up, they have bumps where the paint is, you know, you can tell. So, but I said, "Are they iris prints?" And she says, "No." And she tells me it's a new kind of technology. And what they do is they scan the original painting from all the different angles that are possible. And then the computer and this machine put down oil paint in layers, like 100 layers, and they let it dry in between. And they build up this oil painting over time. And then, so it has all the bumps and everything. And then he has 16 master highlighters who work for him, who apply the highlights by hand to each reproduction. She said that Thomas Kincaid hasn't sold an original painting in 11 years. That 11 years ago, he sold a painting that was about 2 feet by 3 feet for $800,000. And that was the last one. He keeps them all for himself, and he has a museum near where he lives, where you can go see them, the originals. And he's trying to buy back all his old paintings. And the reproductions go, as far as I can tell from the labels, they go for between $1,000 and $5,000. So anyway, I'm completely stunned by this. I ask if they sell a lot of paintings, and she says they sell a ton of them. And then I ask if people are bothered by having a reproduction rather than having an original. And she said that they aren't bothered by it at all, because buying an original would be like buying a Monet, and almost no one has the money for that. And she adds, Tom's not in the history books yet, but he'll get there. That's for sure. Anyway, I am totally amazed by this whole thing. She asks me if I want to be if I want to get an invitation for his visit, and I totally do. He's coming in August, and I think he's coming on the day I get back from vacation, so I doubt I'll ever make it. But boy, I would love to meet this guy and come in and actually like feel his aura, man, because the paintings are so ugly, but he makes so much money. I mean, who is this man? Actually, his book, which I buy, The Glory of Creation, the most interesting thing to me is the back cover where it has his bio. And it says, an inspired idealist, Kincaid believes art has the power to touch people's hearts and change their lives. Kincaid's hallmark glow is an outgrowth of his deep Christian faith, which he believes to be the foundation of his work. Kincaid, a devoted husband and father, lives with his childhood sweetheart, Nanette, and their four daughters in Northern California. Now, isn't it just perfect that he is married to his childhood sweetheart? I mean, of course he is, because he's perfect. He's a deep Christian. He has four daughters. He lives on a beautiful California ranch, and his paintings have glow. Well, that is about all I can take for the day. But wow, I am just jazzed by this Thomas Kincaid gallery. I wish that I'd had the balls to buy one of the paintings, because there were some in there for like the really, really tiny prints for like $250, and now that would have been great. However, I think the book is great too. I also realized that I really enjoyed talking to her, and it was such a gratifying experience. And I realized that I really have not been talking to anybody very much. And I think it's because when you develop relationships like that, then it's harder to return the stuff. And so I think I've been avoiding the people in the stores and trying to make it so they won't remember me. But I think that it would be much more interesting for me if I actually really interacted with people. So I think I'm going to try to start doing this more, like really having a meaningful conversation with people in these stores and see where that takes me. I think it would be really exciting if I started to make some friends here.